Hello, podcast listeners. This is Amy from Stick Together. Today's episode that you're about to hear with Auntie Lynn is only but a short segment of a much larger interview. The second part will be played on my next round of Stick Together in the upcoming month, but I had such a long and bountiful yarn with today's guests that I have created a podcast page where you can listen to the yarn in its entirety. So, if after hearing this, or if you want to dive straight into the full, almost 2 hour long chat, you can head to 3cr.org.au/sticktogether.
This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Stick Together. I'm Amy Ciara, my pronouns are she, her and they, them, and you're listening to the only national program focusing on union news, workers' stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Melbourne for 3CR and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation on the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and we acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded. In today's episode, we hear part one of an interview with legend Dr. Auntie Lynn McInnes. Auntie Lynn has been a powerful and respected First Nations nurse, activist, advocate and unionist, among other First Nations trailblazers who laid the groundwork for First Nations health and community organisations. She is a proud Palawa woman from Tasmania and has lived on the mainland in Geelong since she was 16. She has a beautiful big family, including 5 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. In 1982, she was on the Victorian State Body for the Aboriginal Health Resources Group with Chair Uncle Jim Berg and Manager Kevin Coombs. This was the first of its kind in Australia, leading the way to the establishment of the Victorian Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, known as VACHO. This then led to her involvement in NACHO, the National Aboriginal Controlled Health Organisation Board. Some of the important work she did in these roles was tackling smoking Indigenous programs with Tom Calmer, making sure Aboriginal medical services had access to GPs with the Royal College of General Practitioners. She worked with the Australian Council of Trade Unions to ensure her people were paid appropriate awards in Victoria, which led the way for other jurisdictions. Leaders in Indigenous medical education, she was involved in advocacy across Australia, ensuring First Nations women were getting looked after by obstetricians and gynecologists. Attending the United Nations Permanent Forum in New York, 2011, ensuring appropriate medications were through the PBS. Auntie Lynn also shared many stories with me about the exemplary care she and her peers were providing First Nations people. Whether it was following up being discharged, assisting with the day-to-day, ensuring the hospital treated her people with care and respect, she was working within a community and cultural model of health that was under control and financing of the First Nations community. She set that up as part of the board of the Wathaurong Aboriginal Cooperative and the Aboriginal Community Health Service that was under the community controlled model. It was a service built from the ground up, and as Aboriginal Health Liaison Officer in Barwon Health, she established partnerships that are still in place today. We had a long and bountiful yarn, and I have divided our interview into 2 episodes. In today's episode, we hear about who she is and the challenges she and First Nations people face. Part 2, we hear more about how she and others worked in community to look after the needs of First Nations people and her involvement in the union movement. Our yarn actually went for almost 2 hours, so the interview in its entirety will be online through the website at 3cr.org.au/sticktogether. I'd like to thank Auntie Lynn for her time and inviting me into her home with all her beautiful family photos and Geelong Cats fandom. Also for the copy of her occasional address to Deakin University. I would also like to thank Tim Gooden in driving me out to her place and setting up the interview for us, and for a copy of his introduction for Auntie Lynn when she received her honorary doctorate. Now let's hear today's interview.
Inspired me over the years, have passed away now. Some are still alive. I was very involved with Aboriginal Health back in the 80s, and we were the trailblazers.
Mm.
And when I say that we were the trailblazers, I'm talking about across Australia. Our state body was a very powerful political body. And Uncle Jim Berg was our chairperson. Kevin Coobs was employed at the health department. And so though I learnt and grew into my own skin from those early days and those people. Arnie Alma Thorpe, Wilkie, all the mob from down Melbourne, Alf Bamlett, Trevor Edwards, that's just to name a few. Arnie Laurabelle. There's just so many people that sometimes I hate naming names because I forget them. And I don't want to miss out on anyone. But the people who know me, they know who's been involved in my life. And when I got my doctorate from the University of Deakin, my honorary PhD in philosophy, I invited people who were very much a part of my life. There's a couple of people I forgot, but that's okay. They've forgiven me. But it was very important that people be involved in my journey and who've supported me over the years. Even the Geelong Trades Hall, as Geelong and District Aboriginal Co-op back in the early days before we changed the name to Wathaurong, we always had support from the Geelong Trades Hall. They always supported us. The Labor Party and the people back in those days have passed away now, of course. But the Labor Party and the Geelong Trades Hall have been a very big part of my life. And when I say part of my life, I'm talking about my life and the our organisation, Wathaurong, always. I was the longest-serving chairperson and board member, and I always ensured that we had access to, when Labor was in power, that we had very good access. In fact, Braxy and all those fellas, they used to call into our organisation when they were in Geelong. It was always respect on both sides. And we always respected our stories together. And I say stories because that's what it is. Our culture is about our storytelling. We're the oldest storytelling people in the whole world. And people forget that. And something I found rather interesting, when you listen to something published by Penguin, they actually acknowledge First Nations people.
Do you?
Yeah. And I didn't know that until a few years ago. It made me feel really proud because, you know, whether people like it or not, unfortunately, we're still second-class citizens of our own country. Our country has never acknowledged that we're First Nations people in the Constitution. I know the government of the day tried, but because of the political nonsense that went on with it, with the opposition, they made it very political. And so by making it political, a lot of people just didn't understand what was meant. Anyone who's a refugee or have moved to Australia to live, to make it their country, they're in the Constitution, but us First Nations people aren't. I've actually read that Constitution. It's the most boring book I've ever read, and I didn't enjoy it at all.
Well, I think it's about terra nullius.
It is. It's about terra nullius.
I think it's a constitution written for terra nullius, and that when the Mabo decision came, it should have been rewritten.
That's right. And what upsets me the most when you say that is that as First Nations people, the royal family should have fixed it. They had opportunity after opportunity. Bernard Burnham, when he was alive, actually went to England and met with the Queen to discuss that. Like Bernard Burnham's passed away for a long time. But he was a real activist about that sort of issue. And even I support us being a republic 110%. We need to be a republic. I went to New York, and when I went to New York, it was just interesting that people that were there actually felt sorry for us as Aboriginal people of Australia. And they were people from the South Pacific Islands, et cetera, et cetera. They didn't, some of them didn't even have running water or sewage, but they felt sorry for us because we were recognised as First People. First People. We may be recognised in some or many different ways, but let's be honest, we are not in that constitution. And what annoyed me about it, and I suppose that's the way it is because we're under England, Commonwealth. We're a Commonwealth of Australia under England who reap the benefits from everything that our mining, everything. And a lot of people don't even know that.
Yeah.
You know that?
Yeah.
If you said that to someone, they'd say, oh, you sure that's right? Well, guess what? The royal family have been reaping the rewards from our land for many, many years.
Yeah. That's what this was always about.
Yeah. It's money.
Yeah.
It's always that mighty dollar. But something that's always concerned me is that we may have gained some points in certain areas of our life, but we haven't gained the acknowledgement as First Nations people. And when I was very much involved with that no vote, not in the no vote, but the yes vote.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I was very involved with that. And you had older people in our community questioning it. Well, you know, we talk about self-determination and self-management and all those fabulous words the government used. But in all honesty, the government still control us because they control our organisations through funding. And why they have the control of our funding and what they're actually, well, they're actually directing us what services we provide to our community. When we were self-determined down at Wathaurong, when our CEO was there, he was employed by our dollars. We self-generate our own funds. So he wasn't answerable to the government and they did not like that at all. When I had many conversations with them, they would say, blah, blah, blah. You know, he hadn't attended meetings. He wasn't doing this and he wasn't conforming to what they wanted. And I said, well, you don't employ him. The board does. We pay his wage. And yeah, it was quite an interesting journey, that one.
Stick together.
Yeah.
Stick together.
You're listening to Stick Together on Community Radio.
Hello, you're listening to Stick Together on 3CR or the Community Radio Network, and we are enjoying an interview with legend Dr. Auntie Lynn McInnes. We now return to that interview.
And I firmly believe, you know, like we talk about traditional owners and different groups, we talk about treaty. And I'm still trying to get my head around what treaty really means to me as an Aboriginal person in person, not just for me, but my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, because I've got 7 great-grandchildren. And I often get concerned that things may not change for their lives.
Do you think treaties being done on First Nations terms or on the state's terms?
I think it's a bit of both.
Okay.
That's what I'm concerned about. I have discussions with a couple of MPs, and I know there's some very good people, our people, that actually are involved in treaty. And they're really, they really put a lot of effort in and try and get everyone to understand treaty. But it's like anything that's controlled by government. We're accountable to the government, unfortunately. And that's why I get concerned when you use the, when people use the word, oh, self-determination, Aboriginal people in Victoria, you know, self-determination, blah, blah, they've got treaty, they've got this, they've got that. But in reality, we have not got true treaties where we have complete control. The government still has control of what we do. And it's no different to our organisations. Because they fund our organisations.
And there are models out there for doing this. There's the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Independent Indigenous Peoples, which talks about free informed prior consent.
Yes, that's right.
Where is that? Here in this place.
Well, like I said, I went to America. I went to United Nations back in 2011. And it was just interesting, the people from the South Pacific that we met with every morning before we actually went into the main building, and their conversations with us. It was very interesting. I used to get a bit puzzled about it, and then I remember talking to a few people from Hawaii, and well, Hawaii is one of the states of America, as some people forget. They think of them, Hawaii separate, but it's not, it's part of the United States. And even the people in Hawaii have got their recognition. The Canadian Indians and our Indians in America, you know, the conversations I've had with them over the years. I used to go to conferences and national conferences and international, and this is a conversation that we used to have regularly. Like, how do we change people's ideas of who we are as First Nations people? They see us, a lot of people see us getting everything for nothing, which is not true. I worked hard for my what I have owned. I never got a free car. Like, I had a work car, but I used to pay for my work car every week. You never got anything for nothing. And that's what people, they don't understand it. Even one of my neighbours actually mentioned it to another neighbour, that I get I've always got a new car every year. How can I afford that as a black person? Well, we work for a living too.
Yeah.
I'm from a working family. And there's a lot of our people out there at work. A lot of us have got degrees and double degrees, and we've worked very hard to educate ourselves, and education's really important.
You make me think of, when you say that, Uduru Nunukul, also known as Kath Walker.
Yes, yeah. Kath Walker.
Who led the, who really was one of the first First Nations women to really show black excellence in that way.
She sure did. Yeah. I knew Kath. She was from Stradbroke.
Yeah.
I met her a couple of times over the years before she passed.
What did you think of her?
Oh, very strong Aboriginal, proud Aboriginal woman. She used to make me... I used to love talking to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was a clever woman. There's been a lot of our women who have ran organisations because our men felt very... they weren't empowered to do that, and our men struggled. So a lot of us women we were pretty strong.
I think running an organisation has a lot to do with women's work. You know, if you've looked after the kids, there's a lot of... It's not a heroic role to do organising. It's not the limelight to organise people, to do things behind the scenes, but it's the most important work.
We used to spend hours and hours in our organisation. We weren't paid. It was all voluntary. Now boards get paid. I actually said to one board member, I'll share this with you, I said to her, do I get back paid for all the years I was on the board and chairperson? She said, oh, we couldn't afford to do that. But isn't it interesting now that does it make a difference you're getting paid? I don't know.
Mm.
You still got to abide by the constitution and the model rules of the organisation.
Mm.
The chairperson is the main head of the organisation, and their responsibility is to make sure the organisation's running in that area. And if they're not, the chairperson is the one that's going to take the blame for things not right.
We have the same, probably similar to what you used to have at 3CR. We have community governments. So we have the operational side, which is our staff, and then we have various committees run by the volunteers and subscribers. And we are community funded, so we don't rely on government grants.
Yes.
And because of that, we've been able to voice Blackfellas talking truth. We've been able to voice Palestinians from the beginning, which we've always been under fire for.
Yes.
We've been able to do these things because we've had the control.
That's right.
But what I hear and what you're saying is that that's gone. Where is it now?
Well, we don't have complete control because once you receive government funding, you don't have control.
Mm.
So when we talk about self-determination and all those wonderful words the government use, and they use the word Indigenous. Indigenous, if you look up in the dictionary, means things to many different people from all walks of life from all around the world.
Yeah.
We're First Nations people.
Yeah.
And people need to start using those words instead of actually using the words the government select. Because that's not right.
Mm.
What I found interesting when I was researching some of the history when I was doing my degree, my first degree, is that all the different words the government use, like not First Nations people that ever used that word, we were either Aboriginal or Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, we're used all those different terminology. And what I found when I was researching was that and I've forgotten the words, I'll come back to that because, it's just gone from me.
When you stop thinking about it, it'll come back to you.
It will. It does. That's where it happens. I say to people, when you get older, you've got to be very resilient, and we do.
Mm.
But education to me is very, very important.
Mm.
Another thing I get concerned about is the Stolen Generation and its impact on the people who are part of that generation.
Mm.
Yep. Yeah, with the Stolen Generation, yes. I get very concerned about the organisations now do not do Aboriginality. They have to try and find their family tree, even though they've been proven that they're Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander.
Mm-hmm.
Organisations here in Victoria have got... I know they had to get tighter in what they were doing, but we have got people from the Stolen Generation that were brought up in Geelong, and I'm aware of who their children are having trouble getting their their Aboriginality, and I'm struggling with that because that was never an issue before with our organisations. Our organisations made sure that our Stolen Generation people were looked after.
And that, they have complex needs.
Yeah.
They we have a Stolen Gen presenter who's been with us for many years, Uncle Taljim Edwards.
Yep.
And he's Palawa and also from a variety of mob across Victoria.
Well, most of us are.
Yeah.
I'm Palawa, but I'm also Yorta Yorta and Gunchamara and Wathrong. We're all connected.
Yeah.
People forget about the bridge from Tasmania connected to the mainland. And I say the mainland because that's the way it was. And then it broke away.
But
people still wandered backwards and forwards. We didn't have boundaries, states. That's Whitefella's way. It's not who we are. And do we always have to conform to the Whitefella's way? I don't know. We seem to be doing that more and more. We're forgetting who we are, our culture. When you look at the organisations, and I look at our organisation, and I got someone to read the AGM report to me, we only got 47% that are Aboriginal employed. All the rest are Whitefellas. And I can say that because I don't agree with it. I struggle with that because our organisations are there for our people. You know, it's got to be culturally self-determining. It's like as if we have our rights taken away from us again, our voice. Our voice gets taken away again because you've got to ring, for example, when you ring the organisation, you get this voice telling you, oh, if you want to do A, B and C, you've got to press 1, 2 or 3. And people struggle with that too. We've still got people who are 32 years of age who can't read and write.
That's no good.
And that's not good enough for me.
No.
It's just not good. It's just not on. And because I sit on Koori Court, I hear many stories about their childhood and it breaks my heart. Just breaks my heart. And they're in the system from an early age and then they graduate and they're into prisons.
That's it for Stick Together this week. Keep listening to Stick Together to catch part 2 of our interview with Auntie Lynn. And if you want to hear the entirety of our almost 2-hour long yarn, then head over to 3cr.org.au/stick-together. You can also catch up on the Stick Together episodes there and your favourite podcasts. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03 9419 8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Amy Ciara, and remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there's a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.